Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny, joined by my co-host, Brian. And guys, we are going to kick off today's episode, episode 102 for the loyal followers, with just a recap of Game 5 and how the NBA Finals are playing out. So Game 5, for the people that don't know, was taken by the Warriors. They currently hold a 3-2 lead heading into Boston for Game 6. I predicted the series would be over in 6 games. Let's see if my prediction holds true with the Warriors taking that dub. Just key highlights. Jason Tatum finally had a good game by his standards with 26 points and just as a leading scorer for Boston. And he dished out a couple of assists, had I believe, 10 boards across the board. Just the best player on Boston side. And then the player that most people would not have expected to turn up for the Golden State Warriors was not Steph Curry. It was Andrew Wiggins. He finished the game with a mean double-double. He had 26 points, 13 boards, and he was also locking down Jason Tatum, making every shot very difficult for him on the defensive end. Brian, Steph Curry went 0 for 9 from three-point range. That's, I think, I believe it was the first time in over 100-plus games that he's done this, so just unprecedented to see that happen. But the Warriors still came out with a dub. What were just some of the high-level thoughts and takeaways that you saw from that game?
Yeah, I would say that something that Boston should really be concerned about is what you just mentioned, Dan. I mean, how do you not allow Steph Curry to score a three and you still lose the game? Definitely disappointing. It felt like in quarter number three, Boston had started to turn the tide. They made a run at the very beginning of the quarter. They took the lead. They came back all the way from 16. And then you just saw Golden State make that crazy shot, Jordan Poole, at the end of the third quarter. That kind of felt like the momentum shifted right off that shot for sure. It kind of felt like a pool party at there in San Francisco. And Golden State just kind of fed off that energy, man. It kind of looked like, despite the quarter that Boston had, they were able to still come out of the third quarter with the lead. And I think that that gave Golden State the confidence they needed despite Steph Curry's poor three-point shooting. I think you got to give a lot of credit to Andrew Wiggins. That was definitely, the last two games have been his coming out party, no question, at a really, really important time, because if he did not play to that level over the last two games, I don't know if Golden State could have survived, to be honest with you. I think they at best split. If not, they could have lost potentially both games. And I thought it was interesting. Boston and Golden State have both been undefeated after losses that finally ended with Game 5. Obviously, Boston's lost two in a row now. I don't know about you, Dan, but I kind of feel like they've lost a little bit of that mystique now that they've lost two in a row for the first time in the playoffs. I still think Boston is going to win Game 6. Just everything I've seen in this series tells me Boston still has one really good, strong run in it, enough to force a Game 7. That's kind of what I'm predicting for Game 6.
I personally don't see the mystique that you're alluding to. I mean, I called it from, you know, the beginning of the series, and, you know, my statements hold true. Boston is very careless with the ball. They're just, I don't know if it's that they're undisciplined or they're new to the finals. They don't have, they're inexperienced in that sense. But that was a turning point for me. Just quarter number four, we saw some poor shooting from, you know, from the stars for Boston, or lack thereof. And we just saw some very costly turnovers. So ultimately, I still think that that is kind of been their overall theme in these playoffs. And that's ultimately going to define them. So I didn't see as much of that mystique that not just you, but a lot of people are covering. But I want to touch on a point that you had alluded to, which was the Andrew Wiggins point. Mm-hmm. I do agree with you. Even though Steph Curry had a monstrous game four, and also, you know, he was pretty useful given the fact that he went 0-9, Andrew Wiggins was the defining player for those two games. Do you believe that this is the greatest turnaround for a first overall pick, just given how he started his career, what things were being said about him, the trajectory he was headed, to now being in the NBA Finals and being one of the main reasons that they could take home the chip?
That's a great question, Dan. I actually originally didn't anticipate that question coming in. I had to start thinking about it a little bit as what have been the best turnaround stories from number one picks in the past. The only one that really even comes to mind that could potentially even lead up to what we've seen from Andrew Wiggins is probably Derrick Rose. And that's kind of in a weird way because obviously he was an MVP player in his prime and then obviously the injuries. But to see how he bounced back from those injuries, I mean, he had two almost career-ending surgeries to now basically being a sixth man of the year candidate over the last year and a half, obviously still battling injuries and all that, but he's kind of been a star in different roles with multiple teams now. But I really couldn't think of another player outside of Wiggins that would have this remarkable of turnaround. And I think what this really speaks to, Dan, is when a player is in the wrong culture or the wrong organization, what an impact that makes. Because I feel like, for example, Golden State had D'Angelo Russell, right? They kind of realized, hey, this is probably not going to work out. This is not the right caliber player, not the right personality fit with the rest of this organization. They flip him, get basically Andrew Wiggins and a first round pick that turned out to be Jonathan Kuminga. Honestly, one of the craziest trades of the last probably 10, 15 years. If you now look back on it and you look at it, like Andrew Wiggins has basically become the perfect fit for this Golden State Warriors team. And he's answered the bell. I think he's got great mentor in Draymond Green. I think Draymond is definitely in his ear along the way. And because they have such a good culture, you add in a naturally talented Maple Jordan was his nickname in high school. Obviously, Andrew Wiggins has always had this in him, but it just never felt like the motor was there. And it feels like the Golden State Warriors and Steve Kerr have kind of unlocked that in Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, similar to your history, I was looking back and at first overall picks, and the thing that I saw most frequently was the fact that most first overall picks start very well, but then they kind of taper off, you know, their careers plateau essentially. So it's the opposite with Wiggins. He started decently, but his career's really taken off since he went to the Warriors in terms of success. Just in general, to your higher point, though, with regards to just organization, you hit the nail on the head, man. I mean, we saw Richard Jefferson essentially call out poorly run organizations such as Sacramento and obviously Minnesota in his little soliloquy earlier. But it's true. I mean, these organizations deserve to be put on blast for their lack of player development and, to an extent, for ruining players' careers or not letting them reach their full potential. It needs to be addressed by the NBA. I don't know how, but this is a prime example of what happens when you put a good player in the right system. They become a great player.
Yeah, and I have another example, actually, of the Golden State Warriors doing that, and that's with a guy that I actually wanted to reference in our last segment, Gary Payton. It was very quiet in Game 5, for some folks, but if you look at it, he gave you 15 points, contributed in multiple categories. He made his presence felt despite not being like a 6'5", 6'6 guard like some of these guys. He's obviously a lot smaller, but he kind of like his dad really makes up for that with energy. And he just gave great effort. He was there for the right plays for Golden State at the right times. And he really made an impact. He's a guy that they referenced on the broadcast last night. Like, he's been on 4 G League teams. He's been on 5 other NBA teams, and he gets to Golden State and they just find the right role for him. I mean, again, it just goes back to that organizational standpoint and who's good at it and who's not.
Yeah, I completely agree. I understand now why the quote from the shop was that LeBron would want to go either to Golden State or Miami. It's the culture. It's just the opportunity for players to make the most of their careers and really flourish. Gary Payton's a great example. I mean, he's guarding 1 through 5 at any given time, and he can do it effectively. So that's just an asset that often gets overlooked and was clearly undervalued on all the other teams that he was playing for.
That I agree. I agree, man.
Brian, something I want to cover, another great player that, you know, kind of like these players we've talked about, was a diamond in the rough for the Golden State Warriors, the 30th overall pick in his respective draft class, is Draymond Green. Obviously, he hasn't been having a great finals performance. He, you know, for the most part, his statistics have gone worse and worse in each playoff round. He just isn't the Draymond we've expected and we've known to see, you know, when the lights get brightest. Do you think, though, that we are overlooking his impact to the game because of just how poor the box scores and like the statistics look for him?
100%. And for those of you that have followed on social media, that have kind of seen some of my posts, you know that's exactly how I feel about Draymond. I think the stats are overblown. I mean, yeah, triple single and all this stuff, but Draymond gives you winning plays, guys. If you even just look at last night's example, he had a nice, almost like a little no-look pass on a fast break that like really triggered a nice run for Golden State. The plays that he makes defensively, there was a couple of series with Jaylen Brown where he really made him like uncomfortable, and you could see it. Like, that's the type of intensity and effort that you don't get from the standard guy. And obviously the field goal percentage, guys, is trash. There's no overlooking that. He's not shooting well. He's not who I'm going to rely on to hit that game-winning shot at all. But he's a guy that I think knows what he's doing. He knows his role, and he does a very damn good job at being able to, you know, screen for Steph, get guys open, knows where people need to be. He leads players. If you watch him, you can clearly tell his basketball IQ at a very, very high level. So obviously I get it. I know people don't like his back and forth with the refs. I agree. I think that's just his emotion that kind of gets the best of him. And I think he's a little bit of a showman, Danny. I think he kind of likes getting stirring the drama. I think he sees himself as important as Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, even though a lot of people don't view him that way. I think the way he sees his role in that offense is like, without me, this would not run as smoothly, which honestly, I kind of agree with him on that. I think Steph and Klay and Wiggins, they're really, really good, but Draymond really does open up the floor for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, I'm pretty aligned with you. I think that the media and just in general, the NBA like groups have overblown his overall impact to the game. I mean, we have Isaiah Thomas calling him out, other like ex-NBA players or media members calling him out, prioritizing his podcast over winning, just a bunch of different things. Ultimately, though, I think that his impact goes beyond the stats, and they are up 3-2. In large part because of him, and whether the stat sheet shows it or not, he is kind of the engine that drives that team, whether it reflects in the box score.
Exactly. And I think a lot of these older players that have been kind of hating on Draymond, I think they kind of took offense to Draymond, you know, talking about players from the 80s and 90s. And, you know, there's always the back and forth of, you know, are today's players as physical? And I know JJ Redick got into it with some of them about that as well. Like, you know, look, I see Draymond for what he gives you. Could he play in different eras? I think he could, but you have to judge him in the role that he's in, and he's crushing it. Like, again, the Warriors are up 3-2, guys. Like, I know that the Boston's made it close and things have been interesting, but at the end of the day, I think the Warriors were the favorites coming into it, and despite Draymond's not elite shooting at all, they're still winning the series.
Yeah, and I mean, the older generation and the nostalgia factor that former players, you know, TV show personalities, all that they play definitely is another topic for another day, because we could go down that rabbit hole. But I agree. Draymond definitely just picks he picks certain sensitive topics for people and just goes at them. So I can see him building enemies that way.
Yeah. But he's very entertaining. And if you guys haven't listened to his podcast, it's great stuff.
It's super informative. He breaks it down, and you know, he's the first to call himself out. I do agree with the notion that it can be perceived in the wrong way, in the sense that if you're jumping on the podcast right away, what are you prioritizing? But that's just him. That's what he's going to do. And you know, you can't change a person's personality. Otherwise, you're not going to get what they're good at. You're not going to get that intensity, that passion that they show on and off the court. But Brian, I want to quickly pivot from a player that we believe is having a good impact, but the general public doesn't, to a player that the general public does believe is having a great impact. That is the Finals MVP. As of right now, I think you and I can both pretty comfortably say that the Finals MVP is going to be Stephen Curry if the Warriors do win. But what, in terms of the Finals MVP for the Boston Celtics, who do you have taking it home? And also, I want to kind of just preface this question of, do you think that it would be, if the Boston Celtics make a comeback and they win the NBA Finals, would we like step into unprecedented times and go back to the second Finals MVP that is on a losing team?
Well, I want to start off with that second question about the finals MVP being on a losing team. I've had conversations with like some family and friends and stuff like that. And basically what I told them is if LeBron in 2015 did not get finals MVP on a losing team, no one else, in my opinion, has reached that level. I will say this about Steph Curry, because I don't want to completely dismiss it either. Up before game five, he was basically averaging 34 points on 50% shooting and almost 50% from three. I mean, these are in the finals. Like this, these are against the number one defense in the regular season. I mean, again, very impressive stuff. I think this series was 2-2 because of Steph. I think game five obviously hurt that argument for sure. And honestly, Dan, like, come on. I'm of the belief that the finals MVP should come from the winning team. I'm not a believer in the finals MVP coming from the losing team, just at its core. And to be honest, like if it was going to be anybody, it would have been LeBron. I don't think Curry has played to that level to where we can be like, oh my God, this is like an incredible, never before seen performance. He has had some stinkers. And I think ultimately you can't award the finals MVP to the losing team. I just can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm there with you, man. If LeBron clearly had a much bigger hill to climb, it was just unparalleled. And the finals MVP on the other team ended up being one of their bench warmers, what, 5 years down the road. So I don't want to hear it. If LeBron doesn't win it, Steph does not deserve it. It's that simple. But Brian, heading back to the original point for the Celtics, who do you have leading the race? Because, you know, the media wants to put Jason Tatum in front of Jaylen Brown. I don't think that's the case. Jason Tatum has shot poorly this entire postseason. Well, this entire final run, especially when you look down the stretch of the game, it just seems like his field goal percentage gets worse and worse throughout the game. I think it's been Jaylen Brown in terms of consistency, in terms of overall impact for his team. Now, Jason Tatum did have the better game five, but you know, game one through four, it was Jaylen Brown clearly for me. So if the series were to end with the stats as they are now, like, you know, being constant, I have to give my hat to him.
Yeah, and I think if we were to do a poll on this, I think most of the public would feel the same. I know Tatum is obviously the face of the team and the more popular player, but I think those of us that watch the games, I think can say, I don't want to say it's obvious. I think there's an argument for Tatum, but I would give the slight edge to Jaylen Brown as well. I think when he's been the main scorer on Boston, when he's hitting threes and hitting mid ranges, which by the way, his mid range jumper is looking amazing in the playoffs so far. To me, Jaylen Brown has been the finals MVP for the Boston Celtics. That's who I would give the nod. I think it's definitely closer between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum than it is for like Steph Curry and Andrew Wiggins for sure. But don't get me wrong, Tatum could still come back and you know, if Boston were to win the next two games and Tatum goes off, I think Tatum could easily deserve it.
Yeah. Like as of obviously, if that were the case, no doubt. But as of right now,
yeah,
if we saw the statistics hold constant and like, you know, just the overall experience and the overall efficiency, we'd have to give it to Brown. Yeah. Like it's not a debate.
And Tatum, just the biggest thing is he just has not shot well. I think the shot not falling has really been a big drag on the Celtics offense. There's a game or two that they could have won if he had shot a little bit better, and it might come back to bite them.
Yeah, I mean, I think beyond just the poor shooting, it's also the lack of aggression. I mean, you saw it in game five down the stretch. You just didn't see it in the fourth quarter. The game was theirs for the taking, and they couldn't, you know, capitalize on it, which was very unfortunate.
Yeah. Game five was interesting because if I remember correctly, Tatum and Brown both played the entire second half. So I can understand if they were gassed down the stretch, but I agree with you in general for the whole series. I think we've seen Tatum kind of rear that play style of his kind of rear its ugly head a little too much, where he starts settling for threes when he could easily use his size. I mean, the Celtics have a big size advantage over Golden State, and I feel like they're not going to it consistently enough. I would not surprise me if in game six you see a much, much more aggressive Jason Tatum and a Boston Celtics offense going to the paint.
I mean, we'll see, man. We do call him Game 6 Clay for a reason.
Yeah, so this could be it, man. We've been waiting on that big 30-point performance from Clay. I mean, he had 21 in Game 5 and had like 5 threes. So he did, his shot is looking good, which is definitely not good for Boston. Then you add on Steph Curry coming off a 0 made 3 game. Not ideal for Boston.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, we'll see. Game 6 is obviously going to be one that defines a series. Let's see how it plays out, Brian. Let's quickly jump into some breaking news around the association as of late. We have Kenny Atkinson, current assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors, being hired for Charlotte with the head coach role. What's your take on this pick? Do you like it? Do you love it? Or are you just whatever about it?
So I think it's interesting. So I know that the two finalists were Kenny Atkinson and Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni, well known around the league for being heavy offense guy. He'll get you to the playoffs, but he has yet to deliver that championship. And maybe that's what they kind of thought about when they made this decision. I think Kenny Atkinson is maybe a little bit, he has a lot less playoff experience. I think he's only coaching like 5 playoff games, but I think maybe they see him as a more of a developmental coach, someone who can kind of help their young guys kind of come along, progress, develop, and all that. Obviously, LaMelo, I think, would have been a great fit under D'Antoni's system. I think that's the one thing that even as a basketball fan, I wanted to kind of see. So that's kind of disappointing about it. But from Charlotte's perspective, I don't think they made a wrong decision. I think we got to give Atkinson a chance. I think he did a pretty good job coaching with Brooklyn. And I think he's shown that he can coach young players, which is exactly what Charlotte's mold is. I don't think they were going to win the championship in the next year or two anyway. And I feel like D'Antoni would have been more of a win now coach, whereas Atkinson is kind of like you're building towards getting to that level.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Kenny Atkinson to me was the right choice given where the team currently is. I mean, first things first, they got to get off that Gordon Hayward contract or just wait for it to end. It's that simple with that much money on your books and, you know, just not having that much of an impact at the end of the day. It's going to limit your potential. I think Kenny Atkinson is going to deliver on exactly what you pointed out, player development. We saw it with his time at Brooklyn. He got the most out of his guards, which is the main area of focus for this Charlotte team, right? With his time in Brooklyn, Kenny Atkinson got D'Angelo Russell to be an all-star and ultimately get him his biggest payday with the Warriors. We saw him develop the most out of Spencer Dinwiddie, like basically tripling his point output from when he was with Detroit. And also we saw growth with Caris LeVert in his points, efficiency, rebounds, assists, all stats across the board. So he and his team know how to develop young players. I think he's going to get more out of LaMelo beyond what he currently can already do, which is scary. And he's just going to help develop some of those younger players. I am curious to see if Miles Bridges stays, what they do with some of that size. But overall, I just really like the move. And I think that we're going to see a revamped Charlotte team. I don't know if they're going to necessarily make the playoffs, but I do know that they will be better and that they will ultimately be taking steps in the right direction in the next year.
Yeah. And if Charlotte knows what they're doing, they will pay Miles Bridges. Because, and this is something I was speaking about with my brother yesterday while we were watching the game, if there's anything that these finals have shown, it's you need two-way wings. You need guys like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, 6'7", 6'8", that can get their own shot, that can hit the three, some size on defense. Miles Bridges is a guy that they need to pay because of the year that he had. He's earned it. And I'm really excited to see him and LaMelo and some of the young pieces that Charlotte has for the future.
I wasn't thinking about this, but we might as well discuss it. Do you think Miles Bridges is a max contract player?
Oof, that's tough. If you're giving him a max, you're giving him a max based off what you think he can get. I don't think what he's earned. And it's tough in the NBA because to keep talent, you got to pay talent. So sometimes there are these situations where it can kind of feel like an overpay. But when you've got a young player like Miles Bridges who's kind of ascending, sometimes you just kind of need to bite the bullet. It's easy for me to say that I would pay him a little bit under the max because that's just what I think he's worth. But honestly, if I'm a GM and I know what the market is looking like and I know how hard it is to find Miles Bridges out there, you know, I would try to probably try to pay him and just hope that he, LaMelo, and Atkinson are the right trio to kind of build a core around.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough question. I think that you do have to pay him. So in that sense, I do believe that Miles Bridges is a max contract player, but in terms of just overall production, again, you're looking at it solely on potential, kind of like I see a parallel between this and a DeAndre Ayton situation where you're banking more on the potential and also not allowing some other team to have it more than
that's exactly what it boils down to. And it's either you got to do that or you got to try and get a sign-in trade so you can get some value back so you're not losing him for nothing. You know, it's got to be one or the other. You can't let him walk. You got to get some sort of value for him. Or if you don't think he's the guy and he's not the one you want to invest in, then you try and get a sign and trade done and get a piece or pieces back that you think are going to be worth investing in.
Yeah, Charlotte's got a lot of moves to make this offseason, in my opinion. They do need to round out that roster a little bit more nicely for Atkinson's overall play. First things first, get rid of Mason Plumlee.
Yeah.
But I think that overall they are heading in the right direction early on. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt and see if they can, you know, develop James Bouknight a little bit more heading into this next NBA season. So Brian, let's pivot over to the Western Conference. There was some pretty shocking news that came out through a YouTube video. Anthony Davis was discussing with a couple people that he hasn't shot a basketball since his last NBA game. To be fair to him, from everything that I've read, he has a pretty unique off-season regimen where he doesn't do any workout, anything for the first 4 weeks. And then I believe the next 6 weeks, he's strictly weight training. And then the last 6 weeks, he does basketball-related things. But, I mean, when you first hear this, it's very shocking. Should the Lakers be concerned, and should the general NBA fan person be concerned?
Man, how long has Anthony Davis been on that regimen? Because clearly it is not working. If he's missing games every single year, something's got to change. Hopefully that hasn't been the same regimen from the very beginning. Obviously not what you want to hear if you're LeBron James, and this is supposed to be the guy that's kind of carrying you a little bit in the twilight of your career. Just bad luck, honestly. I don't know what else to say. I don't trust that AD is going to stay healthy next year. I really can't. I didn't think he was going to be healthy this year, and that's exactly what happened. And he was healthy technically starting at the beginning of the year. So it doesn't feel like the 6 month off season is even going to be enough. That's really what it feels like, Dan. I feel like we're going to get to Christmas and he's going to be taking rest days left and right. So disappointing. I'm definitely, if I'm a Lakers organization, I'm 100% concerned. I've only gotten one ring out of the LeBron James Anthony Davis experiment. I know how hard it is to win championships, but you were hoping for another one. There's still time, but just with the Russell Westbrook fit, I don't love it. I do like the hire of Darvin Ham. I think he's going to be someone that kind of brings them some more structure, and he's going to be a guy that I think they respect immediately, but I just don't think you can count on AD to stay healthy, man.
Something that you said really just struck a chord with me. You said it's just bad luck all around. At this point, do you consider it bad luck, or do you just consider it poor preparation and like anticipation? Because I'm a believer that if AD has had this regimen, let's say for multiple years, I'm not going to go beyond, you know, three, let's say 3 years at the max. What has he gotten out of it besides one good year, which the argument could be made if the NBA doesn't pause, he could have gone and injured again.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I believe that, you know, this regimen isn't working out for him for better or for worse. It just isn't getting him to his full potential. It's not having the best effect on him, and he needs to change it. If he's still doing this after several years, at this point, I am saying it's poor preparation. It's not luck. It's more so him not preparing the right way.
I agree. It's funny, Dan. You don't really think about it, but the amount of time that AD had before having a return at the bubble, I think was a huge catalyst to why the Lakers were even, you know, able to win the championship. Obviously, we've seen that without AD, that's not a championship team. So him being healthy is literally the difference between the Lakers being a playoff team and not. And I don't think, even with as great as LeBron James' career has been, I don't know if they're in the point, that team, the way that roster is set up, that they could win a championship without a 100% fully healthy, firing on all cylinders, prime Anthony Davis. Like, they need the very best from him. They don't need like his B game. Like, they need his A plus game. And it's not just for the playoffs, it's to even make the playoffs. So as we saw this year, like, they missed it. That's, AD is a big reason why. And if I'm LeBron, I'm 100% concerned. I don't think it's a coincidence that LeBron's been dropping all these little interviews and just dropping hints of, oh, where would I play? And, oh, I can't wait to play with Bronny no matter where he goes. He's definitely not – he loves L.A., but I don't think he's going to commit to that organization with the way their roster is, which is, again, ironic considering everywhere LeBron goes, he kind of leaves it a mess after he leaves. I think he's going to end up doing the same to the Lakers. The Lakers are going to be an absolute disaster whenever LeBron James leaves.
I mean, to be fair, most organizations, with the exception of the Heat, are a mess prior to LeBron getting there. So I don't blame LeBron necessarily for that. I put it more on the organization.
You say that, and I see where you're coming from, but I think you have to acknowledge that LeBron does handpick, so to speak, the players that he wants to play with, and he kind of forces the organization to acquiesce to his demand.
I completely disagree with you there, because if LeBron were to do that, he would have the coaching staff he would want. He would have the overall player personnel that he wants.
You don't think that he had a say in Frank Vogel getting let go and Darvin Ham being a head coach? I think he did.
Absolutely not.
I think he did.
Because if that were the case, Frank Vogel would have never been hired. It would have either been Monty Williams or Tyronn.
I disagree. I think he respected Vogel from the years that he played against Indiana in the playoffs.
He made it very clear from the beginning he wanted either Tyronn Lue or Monty Williams. And ownership flat out told those coaches, one, we're basically assigning you your assistant head coaches, and two, you're not getting the number of years on your contract that you want.
And that's why they ended up with the candidates that they did. but at the same time, he still has influence in the players that the Lakers have brought on. 100%. He wanted Russell Westbrook. He wanted to play with AD.
I agree with you. But to be fair, we can't just say that he leaves it a mess and he's the sole reason that this happens. Like, no, this organization was a mess before he got there, and he just happened to make it better for the time he's there.
Yeah, and he doesn't help on the way out, I'll tell you that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you take a look at an organization like Miami. What did they do? They told him, hey, no, like, we'll acquiesce here, but we won't fully acquiesce. They went out and they got Norris Cole. They went out, they got some shooters, but they didn't necessarily do everything LeBron wanted. And it worked out for them. They missed the playoffs, I believe, 2 years, and then went right back into it. So they pivoted rather than completely rebuilt. But beyond this, like, I don't want this conversation to be like fully LeBron centered,
fully Miami Heat centered. Of course.
No, I mean, well, I don't need to talk more about Cleveland and the mess they were before and after he left.
Oh yes.
I mean, finally they picked it back up, and same thing with the Lakers.
The irony, by the way, that he asked for them to basically get rid of Andrew Wiggins, and now we led the show with highlighting Andrew Wiggins and how great he's been playing. It's kind of crazy.
I mean, Andrew Wiggins wouldn't have gotten more ring. You know that.
Full circle. Yeah, well, I mean, maybe if LeBron was a little patient, he would have gotten multiple rings. But, you know, hey, what are you going to do?
Do you have time to be patient at the end of the day? But beyond that, what I want to focus on is the AD structure here. AD was brought in by LeBron because AD, I think everyone can agree, was a top 10 player, maybe top 5 player of the league when he was with New Orleans, and LeBron knew he needed to start taking a step back, let AD take the role. AD comes, he's still doing his thing. It just in the same habits, and it looks bad because you see his free throw percentage, it's been getting worse. You see his field goal percentage, it's been getting worse. Like, everything seems to be getting worse over the years, and this isn't what we expected. And now with this, knowing that his regimen stays the same, I mean, come on, man. Like, it's just it boils down to AD not really. I don't want to say he doesn't care, because I think that would be a very overblown statement, but I just don't think he's evaluating his decision making the right way and looking at alternatives. And I think that's what it ultimately boils down to. And everyone across the board, both in the Lakers organization and in the league, should be a little bit sad about that.
Yep, pressure is going to be on AD this year, 100%. They are going to be watching. He is not on a championship kind of parade this anymore. Like, that's done. The bubble was a long time ago. It's time to get some results.
I mean, we said that last year, right? Yeah. But
well, the Lakers are kind of stuck with him right now, so.
Yeah, it didn't translate much. Brian, we were talking about LeBron, obviously, and just what a mess he apparently leaves everywhere. He obviously has done a lot of interviews lately. One of the interviews was with his show, The Shop. Maverick Carter basically asked him what he would rather do. Would he rather be an NBA owner or a TV analyst? He said NBA owner, and he even went as far as to say that they should have a team in Vegas. One, do you agree with his sentiment that LeBron would be a better NBA owner than a TV analyst? And two, what are your thoughts about LeBron actually owning a team in Vegas in the upcoming years?
Well, as funny, we just got off the subject of LeBron because I think he's basically been a little mini team owner as is throughout the later half of his career. But I will say, I think he would be a really good owner. I think he'd be a better owner than a TV analyst. And to be honest, because I know he was mentioning Tom Brady and his transition, I think both of them will both end up being owners at some point. I think that's both of their ultimate goals because I think they're both competitors. They still like to win while also being involved heavily in an organization and their decision-making. I think they've both gotten to see the lens of a player and having to see kind of what the owner decides. So I think they both kind of thought in their head, like, man, it would probably be cool to be able to be that final decision-maker. And also for LeBron, just for a personal reason, it'd be fun to see Michael Jordan as an owner versus LeBron James as an owner, just so we can keep the conversation and the comparison going.
It's funny you mentioned Brady because we do know that Brady was offered ownership with the Miami Dolphins if he did go and play for them, a couple of years or coming into this year, I believe. So it's just interesting that ownership is on the table for two of the arguable GOATs in their respective sports.
Yep, I think it's going to happen.
I agree with you. I think that it is inevitable that both, if definitely one, if not both of them, own a team in their respective leagues. And I think that the NBA, like, I'm going full blown conspiracy theorist here. I think that the NBA is actually holding off on expanding the league until LeBron does retire and can kind of put in a bid to be an owner. I just think it lines up too perfectly.
I could see that. I think it's gonna happen within the next 3 to 5 years, and I definitely think Vegas is going to be a city, like one of the cities. And I think LeBron is going to definitely target that.
I mean, the NBA has confirmed that Vegas and Seattle are the two main destinations if they were to expand. And again, it lines up perfectly. And I think the NBA knows just how much LeBron has done for the league over his entire career and what he could do for the league moving forward. So I think it's just the perfect power play waiting to be played out. I have no definitive proof of this. It's just a gut feeling. But again, it perfectly lines up. It perfectly makes sense for it to play out that way. All right, Brian. And then the last topic I want to cover with you. Obviously, we have the NBA Finals going on. Last two games are going to be played. But next week, we have the NBA Draft getting ready to kick off. We do know the order for the lottery and basically all teams. But I want to focus on the top three picks. We've been told that this draft is extremely top heavy. Top three picks are basically unanimous in terms of the top players. Maybe a fourth player slips in there. It goes back and forth if Jaden Ivey should be a top four player. But Brian, just in terms of the top three picks and the teams that are drafting respectively, so we have Orlando at one, OKC at two, and Houston at three. What are your thoughts on these top three picks, and what do these teams do with their picks, or who do they draft with their picks?
Yeah, I think the vibes that I'm getting from the Orlando Magic is that it's going to be Jabari Smith as the number one pick, and I think they can't go wrong there. I know that a lot of folks have kind of projected Chet Holmgren, and we've kind of heard about what he's done at Gonzaga and his size, but I think there's still some question marks there of, do you want to make him the number one pick? It is kind of high risk, high reward, and I think Jabari Smith Smith is a little safer. Maybe his potential isn't as high. Maybe it is. But I think he's a little bit of a safer pick at number one. And then you look at OKC, they're kind of in an interesting spot at number two. I could see them still going Paolo Banchero. I know that Chet Holmgren, again, is projected heavy on the top three, but I could see the Thunder potentially making a move with Banchero. I do think that Chet Holmgren kind of fits the style that OKC has been looking for, especially could be a good fit with like a Josh Giddey and an SGA. But I think Paolo Banchero would be an even better fit for the Thunder. What do you think, Dan?
I kind of have the opposite of what you have. So first prediction is that Orlando gets rid of Mo Bamba, Bol Bol, or Wendell Carter Jr. one way or another. They just get rid of one or two of those players to make room for Chet Holmgren. I don't know why. I just get this inkling that they're leaning more towards Chet because they want to build around Jalen Suggs. Both of them are from the same state, Minnesota. They both went to Gonzaga. There's clearly a relationship there and like some rapport. I think that they're fully invested in Suggs, so they're going to fully invest in Chet, who's not a bad first overall pick, but definitely has a lot more question marks than Jabari Smith. And also they have, you know, a similar wing, definitely not in play style, but how would Jabari Smith play alongside Jonathan Isaac, who's been off for 2 years, basically? It just raises more questions to me than moving off of Mo Bamba, Wendell Carter, or Bol Bol that clearly haven't lived up to their potential and their expectations. Pivoting off of that to the second overall pick with Oklahoma City Thunder, I think it's a win-win for these guys any way you spin it. If Orlando drafts Chet Holmgren first overall, they get the majority consensus first overall pick in terms of talent at second with Jabari Smith, and they're looking pretty nasty with a backcourt of Giddey and SGA, and then a frontcourt featuring and highlighting Jabari Smith. But let's say that Jabari Smith goes first overall, Chet Holmgren falls to them. He is the quintessential player that Sam Presti looks for. I mean, this, you know, the recent drafts have shown it. Players like Alexei Pokuševski, players like Josh Giddey, he goes for players that he sees unique skill sets that he can like acquiesce to fit his team and what they're going for in Oklahoma City. So I think that they're in a great position. I think Banchero is probably the best NBA-ready prospect in terms of just, you know what he is. He's an elite scorer. He can give you energy on both sides of the floor. And I think that's exactly what Houston's probably going to get.
Yeah, I think Banchero is a NBA-ready player, like you said. I think he could be an all-star one day for sure. I've heard some comparisons to Jason Tatum. So we'll see if he ends up getting to that level. I do think with Banchero and with Smith, like they're both players that just, as I touched on, that two-way. But I think Banchero has some more work to do on the defensive end, but they both have the potential to be those two-way elite type of stars in the league. And I think those are just guys that if they're available in the top three, I'm not passing up on them. I know Holmgren is going to be a popular pick, and I understand the unique skill set and the appeal there. But again, I think we got to keep an eye out on Banchero to go into number two, just because he has that ability to score, do it defensively. And I think Holmgren's frame, like how skinny he is going to end up being a problem at the very least for the first few years. Maybe OKC's willing to deal with that, but I don't know. That's a big gamble to me.
I think a comparison I read, which I thought it was a little bit of a slight, but I could definitely understand, was that Banchero is this generation's Carlos Boozer. And right now his game kind of reflects it, right? Probably a little bit more athletic, but we do see the limitations or the areas of development that need to improve in order for him to be solidified as a first overall pick. Either way, I don't think any of these top three teams can go wrong. I would not be surprised if one of the teams that's drafting lower, so a team such as New York, sorry, buddy, I have to call them out, but you know, teams like New York, teams that were expecting a higher draft pick, if they do try to trade up, it makes a lot of sense. It's really top three, top four picks, and then the talent pool just completely, I don't want to say diminishes, but the drop-off is pretty insane. So I would not be surprised if maybe Houston or OKC trade out of their picks and they just get a haul for one of these guaranteed, straight shooters in the NBA right off the bat.
Yeah, I think the best thing for the New York Knicks is absolutely to trade up and get Jaden Ivey at number four. That is my Hail Mary, praying for that this summer for the Knicks. But again, as far as the draft goes, I'm excited. I'm excited to dig deeper into it once the finals are over. And I do agree with you, like after top four, there's definitely a fall off. Those are the top guys in the draft. Ivy obviously being a Ja Morant comparison. I think anyone who gets a top four player this year is going to be pretty happy with who they get.
Yeah, and I don't want to overlook the other player from I don't remember what team he's from, but Murray, the forward center.
Keegan Murray, yeah.
Keegan Murray. I think that he's definitely a good five option. I think everyone can agree that it's the top five, but like Keegan Murray's like a borderline five to the other talent pool. But overall, to your point, Brian, we're definitely going to have more insight on how teams are leaning and inkling towards their draft selections as we get closer to the draft and after these NBA finals wrap up. So, you know, next week, guys, Monday, we're going to give you guys our recap of the overall finals, how things go and how things shape up, our thoughts, and then we're going to jump right into NBA draft. We're going to probably highlight some recent drafts after a couple years removed, what we think of them now, and also heading into this draft, like what do we think the lottery is going to play out like given the information we have. So be tuned for next week's episode, guys. But that wraps it up for this week, guys. We've covered a plethora of topics, so we really hope you enjoyed it. And make sure to just stay tuned for any content that we post on social media. We're definitely going to be engaged as these finals wrap up and continue to engage with us. We love the interaction, and hit that notification, follow so that you are up to date with the most recent podcast episodes when they drop. We do try to give you guys anticipation on when they're going to drop, but again, we just want to make sure you guys are tuned in for that moment. Brian, do you have anything else to say?
No, it's been a pleasure. Can't wait to see game six Thursday, and hopefully we get a game seven on Father's Day so that we can break it down on Monday, Dan.
All right. I agree. And then obviously we'll be prepping for the draft, which is next Thursday. So stay tuned for that, guys. Until next time, have a great one.